Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet.
Before we get started, I want to mention that KABU is in the midst of our spring membership drive. KABU is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you. Not only that, KABU has trained thousands of people how to make radio all for free, thanks to the support we receive from our members. So help us reach our $56,000 fundraising goal. Your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $12,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio.
The Portland metro area is a land of water at the confluence of two of the major rivers in the Pacific Northwest. The Chinookan people who lived along the Columbia and Willamette Rivers before European contact were master canoe builders, and the rivers were their highways. When Europeans displaced the tribes and disrupted their way of life, these settlers continued to use the rivers as their primary arterial for commerce. Numerous ferry lines crossed the rivers, playing a major role in transporting people and goods. But with the onslaught of the automobile, Oregonians lost their connection to the rivers that were so pivotal in shaping and defining this region for millennia. But now there's a movement to bring a world-class passenger ferry service to the Portland metro area. Today we talk with Friends of Frog Ferry founder and president Susan Bladholm and Captain Peter Wilcox about their vision to use the waterway Mother Nature gave us as a natural highway to move about the region. Susan and Peter, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you, Barbara. It's great to be here.
Well, Susan, I met you actually on Zoom a few weeks ago at a meeting for the Brady River Campaign. It's nice to see you almost in person. We've got a piece of glass between us, but we are live at the studio today. I wanted to get a sense about why you were inspired to try to bring ferry service to Portland.
Well, I look back on it, and really there was not a great intention around a ferry service, but it was looking at my hometown and where I've raised my children, and hearing about all the money we were spending on transportation and being really concerned about what I've always thought of as our really clean air and worsening greenhouse gas emissions. And I've been in the aviation business in the past and flying overhead over our rivers. I'd look down and I'd see these choke points on I-5 and the I-5 bridge, and the river was wide open. And you fly up to Seattle or Vancouver, BC or San Francisco, and you see the ferry system moving so many people. So I was just curious, and I took a Saturday, and I did a little research. And that ended up being a 12-page plan, took it out to the transit leaders and said, hey, why aren't you guys considering this?
Well, in the last few years, I was spending a lot of time up in the Puget Sound area, and I started realizing that, because it's such an obvious water system. I mean, you're living right on the water, and people really relate to the Salish Sea. And though I was spending most of my time in Tacoma, where I don't think there's ferry service, but in Seattle, I'm very much aware of the ferry service. I've participated in using it over the years. And it started making me realize that, yes, here in Portland, we also live amongst waterways. They're not marine waterways like the Puget Sound, but they certainly are waterways that can move traffic. And that's when I started wondering, why couldn't we have ferry service or water taxis or something here as well? And I live in Selwood, which has a long history before it became a part of Portland, when it was an independent city, where the only way to get from Selwood to Portland was by boat. And there was a ferry landing down at the end of Spokane Street. And it was interesting that Selwood got incorporated into Portland so that they could build a road, which is Milwaukee Avenue. And to me, that's the story of why Portland lost its connection with the river. So I'm wondering how you saw like this car-centric world that we're living in here in Portland and could sort of impose on that a ferry service.
So truly, it really was from an aerial perspective as a pilot looking down. And you know, you look at MapQuest during commuter hours and you see all of those red arterials. And I remember my brother being caught in traffic on the Fremont Bridge one day, and he called me and he said, and Susan, you know what is green lit in terms of being wide open is the river. And so it was really that aerial perspective and taking a look at it. And by the way, Barbara, Tacoma is looking at starting a ferry service from Tacoma up to Seattle. So it's funny you mentioned that. And yeah, we've had this history of it here. But I think our transit planners have really lost the ability to look at the river. We've just become so road and rail focused. And the more digging and research I did, I realized ferry services are considered a best practice for river cities, and they're growing exponentially in river cities. So it's a really strategic way for river cities to help evolve and add a new mode of transit.
I'm kind of curious about some river cities that are using ferries, because most of the places that I'm aware of are on bays or inland seas like the Salish Sea. I do know that New York City, between the time I lived there in the 70s and 60s, and now has a pretty amazing taxi service, water taxi service. And there, of course, is the Staten Island Ferry, which has been around for a long time. But, and I guess New York is actually kind of a river city. It's actually an estuary city. But what are some of the other cities that would be more analogous to Portland having a confluence of two major rivers?
Actually, I was back and got to ride several of the ferries in New York in November, and it's absolutely extraordinary what they've done, and even since Hurricane Sandy came through. For us, we've done a best practice case study analysis, and that's actually on our website and under the research tab. One of the ones we really love is Brisbane and the Brisbane RiverCats there, because they have the low bridge clearance there and rather narrow riverway. And so when you look at Brisbane, there are a lot of similarities there, even for in London and the Thames service. A lot of commuters going through there. I was in D.C. in October, and we've used that model loosely for 5 years because they have the low bridge clearance. They also have river debris there as well. They're catering more to tourists than commuters. So we've done a cross-section of six different case studies. Some are very similar to Portland from an operational perspective inland, and some are more like us from a governance perspective. For instance, it was 1999 when the San Francisco ferry system started following the La Brea earthquake. So even though they're open water in a very different operational model, from a governance perspective and their founding, very similar. So we've been trying to pull the best practices and learning from a myriad of different ferry operations around the world.
Well, actually, I remember after the big earthquake in 1989 in the Bay Area, and the Bay Bridge fell down. And I had this friend who was living in the East Bay, and she started using the water taxi that was going between the East Bay and San Francisco. And she said, once you're down below the bridge, you never want to be up on it again.
Isn't it true? I mean, they've got amazing research coming out of San Francisco, and they've got employers, and they are saying, we are at the door at 8 a.m, and I watch an employee walk in who's just spent an hour and a half behind the wheel. They're frustrated, they're already exhausted, they've got a big scowl on their face. And then I've got someone coming in from the ferry, happy, emails and text messages are caught up. I've got two completely different frames of mind of employees coming in to start their day.
Well, we have Captain Wilcox on the phone. So good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Barbara. Nice to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you with us now. And I wanted, I understand you're the engineer behind this project, but I wanted to get a sense about why you are such a proponent of ferry service.
Well, you know, I first came to the Northwest when I was about 11 years old and rode the Washington State ferries and ferries up in BC, and just completely fell in love with them. You know, like Walt Whitman says, ferries are like living poems, you know, living poetry. There's just something that's magical about them. They're public transit. I like them so much better than the super expensive cruise type of travel. There's just no comparison, and you can go anywhere. We've done trips where we've just made riding ferries in places the focus of our trips, and it's been wonderful. Meet so many people and see so many great places.
Well, I actually spent a lot of time on the BC ferries when I first came to Portland, and not as much recently, but I periodically go up to Lund, BC. And it's two ferry rides from Vancouver up to Powell River, and then about a half hour, 45-minute drive from Powell River to Lund. And I've thought many times about the difference between that 10-hour drive and ferry trip to Lund and the 10-hour drive to San Francisco, and how half of the drive when I go up to Lund is on these two ferries. And first of all, it's incredibly scenic, and it's also relaxing. So that makes me think about all the nice things about ferries. But part of it is that you don't have to be the driver and you're not dealing with all that stress. And so, Peter, what really made you think about maybe becoming more involved in getting ferry service started in Portland?
Just recognizing that, I started working on a ferry idea about 15 years ago, and there was an inner city circulator, kind of like a streetcar on the water. The fact that the public already owns, we the public already own the right-of-way of the rivers, of navigable river waters everywhere in the United States. So that vastly reduces the pricing of building commuter service on boats versus, you know, light rail, for example, and even buses. So it's just it's just kind of an ideal thing. And then we know from lots of research and more coming out all the time that being on or near water has a great effect on our psyches, on our happiness, on our health even. So it just seemed to me like that was an ideal thing. And when my project trying to get this to happen, you know, failed at, without any sort of real leadership support from the electeds, and I heard about what Susan was doing, I don't know, about 4 years ago, I immediately just knew I wanted to put all the effort I possibly could into helping this one be successful. Better ideas.
Susan, I wanted to take a look back at how these waterways were used prior to the time that Europeans came here, and how that was maybe inspirational for you to think about a ferry service.
Well, I spent 10 years as the director of corporate marketing at the Port of Portland, and I got to work on an exhibit that was out at Portland International Airport for about 15 years. It was called The Mighty Columbia River of Trade. And we really did a deep dive, a lot of work with the Oregon History Center. And I didn't realize, as, you know, a local girl, that, you know, once upon a time, looking up at Celilo Falls was a top five World Trade Center in the world. I mean, in the world, a top five. And so just thinking of the commerce and the activity that was moving through there in this powerful river system. And honestly, when I first joined there, and that's going back 20 years ago, the story of the rivers was really told from the white man's perspective. So I really felt compelled to do some homework and to take a look at the indigenous peoples who were here, you know, going back 30,000 years ago, from 300 to 30,000 years ago, and just what a rich, you know, world and ecosystem this was, and why they chose here. And I think all of us as residents have this abundance of riches as well, but I think we've kind of lost sight of them. And I think there's a responsibility to it in protecting the river, and even asking around and saying, what elected official is really responsible for the river?
And which ones are?
They're really... isn't one. It's startling when you really start taking a look at it. And you can say, oh, well, the Army Corps of Engineers, and from a regulatory perspective, or the EPA, or, you know, but it's really who's responsible? You know, there isn't someone saying, hey, let's protect our river system here. So that was definitely a big part of it. And then also I had the opportunity to work with, he's now the chair of the Chinook Tribal Nation, Tony Johnson, and their resident artist, Adam McIsaac. And we worked on an art installation when I was with the Port of Portland. So I got to learn a lot. I got to learn about Chinookan art and the art form and the geometric patterns, and how it really, they can't be created by computers. It's the hand-hewn nature that is so intrinsically part of the value of the art. And I just fell in love with their work and learning about it. And so that was imprinted on my brain. And after we completed that project out at Portland International Airport, they gave me a lithograph of a frog and told me the story of frogs. So this has sort of been this confluence of all these wonderful experiences in my past coming together. And frog is framed up in my office. And as things were starting to move forward a little bit with the ferry service, and again, I didn't intend to have a career and be part of this movement, but I looked at Frog and I called Adam and Tony, and Adam called me back at 10 o'clock at night and said, now, what is it you want? And I said, can I use Frog in your artwork? I don't know if this is ever going to see the light of day, but I need to call this something. And they said, absolutely, please do. They wrote the artist statement that's out on our website for who Frog is. And we worked with Adam a bit to kind of evolve it to make sure it was going to really hold up as a logo, because it was never intended to be a logo. And so it's just inherently such an important part of what Frog Ferry is. And so we have this vision of having the native art at each one of the stops. I would love to have indigenous names for each one of the stops. And we have an opportunity and a responsibility to educate our residents and visitors about our history here on our river systems.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Frog Ferry founder and president Susan Bladholm and Captain Peter Wilcox about their vision to use the waterway Mother Nature gave us here in Portland as a natural highway to move about the region.
And I want to remind you that now is a good time to become a member of KBOO during our spring membership drive. KBOO receives 80% of our funding from our listeners, but only 10% of listeners are members. Help increase our member-listener ratio and meet our $56,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KBOO FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $12,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio.
So what is the significance of frog, Susan?
So frog, for one, is amphibious, but in the Chinookan mythology, frog is credited with teaching the local people how to fish. And so the people would come down to the riverfront, and frog would show them how to collect nettles from the riverbanks and then stitch them together to create nets so they could use them for fishing. And frogs, not just in the Chinookan mythology, but the research I've done, represent good luck or good fortune really across many cultures around the world.
So let's talk a little bit about what this frog ferry would look like. Where does it start? Where does it go?
Well, I have to answer that in two different ways. We have a pilot project, which is really our next step, and that is from the Cathedral Park dock right at the base of the St. John's Bridge to River Place on the west bank of the Portland downtown waterfront, where a lot of people remember the Newport Bay restaurant was. But in terms of start and finish, for our overall vision, we have 10 stops mapped out from Vancouver, Washington, to Oregon City. And that's not to say we don't hear from Ridgefield and Camas and other locations that want us. I just heard from the city manager at Westland. He's like, we're going to open those locks and make sure you're thinking about us. So, you know, there are lots of different opportunities here, but we have to really be laser focused. And Captain Wilcox is wonderful that way and reminded me, and he gave me a beautiful photo of a heron for Christmas and said, keep your focus on this, you know? Yes, Vancouver down to Oregon City, but I really don't want your listeners to be thinking about, oh, we start in Vancouver and then we have to stop every place along the way. Really, for ferry systems, they're very modular. So we would be running express services for commuters in the morning and late afternoon, and then it would be more of the iterative back and forth. Captain Wilcox was talking about a circulator, that means kind of inner city back and forth crisscrossing the river.
Sounded like the New York subway system. You have the express trains, you've got the local trains.
Right.
Now, I have a big question. Are you going to have that ferry landing at the end of Spokane Street in Selwood?
You know, I get questions every day about, hey, what about the stop nearest to us? We don't have that one on our top 10 right now, but it's something if we hear from the community and we can see that there's adequate demand there, then that's something we can have the conversation about. We try not to get too precious about where the stops are. We worked with PBOT, ODOT, TriMet, and Metro, and they've really provided guidance of here's where we have the greatest need and demand, and then also connectivity to and from the docks. It's called the first and final mile. So people have to be able to get to the docks and from the final dock location to where they're going, and we really don't want to be inducing people using cars to get there. So can people get there by bike? Can they walk? And, you know, just looking at that proximity. So there's basically a business plan behind each one of those docks. But you want to talk about putting together a business plan behind that one in Selwood, we can have the conversation.
I'll have to talk to our neighborhood association. I go with my dog just about every day down to where that ferry landing is. And right now, it's just one of those kind of rubble-strewn places along the river that hasn't been really taken great care of. And it's right next to Silver Riverfront Park, which is taken great care of. And then there's a walkway that goes to some marinas that is also well-kept. And I look at that, and I keep thinking, this would be a great ferry landing, as it once was. And the other thing I think about is how when the Seward Bridge was being replaced, they stopped the number 40 bus from going over the bridge. And we still don't have any bus service over the Seward Bridge. So that would be another reason to bring the ferry service
really
to the end of Spokane.
Interesting. Yeah, so Milwaukee, we're looking, you know, Milwaukee is a potential stop there. And we have a really great group of supporters out of Oak Grove as well. And they would love for us to take a look at, you know, what was going to be the Oglo Bridge, but or Oak Grove over to Lake Oswego. So, you know, it's not that this has to be all Frog Ferry, but if we change the culture around thinking about how we navigate around the region, it's not to say there couldn't be smaller operators coming in and operating as well. You know, this is, we're just trying to get people to rethink about how they're navigating around the region and providing another option and trying to get them, inducing them to get out of cars and connect with a river.
Might be cool if you could connect to the Canby Ferry.
Absolutely.
I can think of two ferries that cross the Willamette, and that's one of them. And then there's another one down in Buena Vista.
and the Wheatland. So there are three, okay, actually, down in the valley.
Well, Peter, I just want to get back to a conversation I had with Robert Liberty a few weeks ago on this show where I brought up the Frog Ferry, and he was kind of skeptical, and he said, well, ferries are very dirty. They use bunker fuel. They're just not efficient. And he had all kinds of reasons. And I understand he had a conversation with you, Susan.
Right, with both of us.
Right. And I understand you maybe turned him around a little bit on that. So I wanted to hear from you about why you think that ferry service actually is much less polluting than cars.
Well, so we've got this heavy traffic. Let's just look at the Vancouver to Portland connection. We've got this really heavy traffic and congestion going on there, so much so that we're looking at investing billions of dollars in a new bridge and widening the freeway and so on. With ferries, you've got, and especially with catamaran hulls that meet the need of not creating wakes, of substantial wakes in the river when they're moving through the river because of all the other human-powered and outboard-powered and whatever smaller boats out there, you immediately get a super efficient hull that requires a lot less power than traditional hulls, and that's how Frog Ferry's designed to sort of maximize the efficiency of the hull. We just in studying the pilot project, we see that I did the carbon calculations for that. We see that the annual from that one ferry, just from Cathedral Park down to River Place, we'd save over 3,000 metric tons of carbon a year just from that. And then lowering congestion, of course, by taking those hundreds of cars off the road in each direction every day, you get slightly higher travel speed, less stop and start. That also increases the efficiency, which we're not trying to measure, but could, I suppose, of the cars moving on the freeway. So, and then the development of electric propulsion for boats and particularly passenger ferries around the world has just exploded. There are for example, in Bangkok, there are something like 30 electric ferries already there now, where before they had these heavily polluting ferries with big use, oftentimes with V8 car motors driving the ferries. Now there's 30, and the president of Thailand has said by the end of next year they expect to have over 300 electric ferries operating in Bangkok, replacing these fossil fuel powered vessels. And we also have an opportunity, and in the pilot, we'll be using renewable diesel, R99, it's known as, which is a pure diesel that's made without petroleum liquids, fossil fuel liquids at all, made from different waste products, even from plastics and municipal solid waste, for example, as well as from used cooking oil and renderings and things like that. So you've got a low, and the California Air Resources Board says that renewable diesel is 60 to 90% lower CO2 emissions compared to petroleum diesel over its full life cycle, as well as 35% up to near 100% particulate reduction, and particulates are, of course, the main human and wildlife health hazard, acute health hazard from the burning of fossil fuels, and particularly diesel. So you've got that will just be for the pilot boat. The plans are to be full electric for the full system and actually convert the pilot to full electric too once we do that. But we need to learn and study the characteristics of the river currents and the tides and the different times of year to really dial in those electric vessels that'll follow, we hope, after that.
With the electric vessels, how are they going to be charged? I mean, I know that with this ferry system in Seattle, they've started, I think they've been, when the boats are docked, they're on electric power. But when they're actually going across the Salish Sea, I think that they're still burning some kind of less lethal bunker fuel than they used to. So how would you make it be how could you have an engine that was electrical powered and that would be easily recharged along the way?
Well, you need to charge. The charging infrastructure is an issue itself. That's another reason why the pilot's going to run on R99 is because PGE, we're working very closely with PGE. Susan can talk more about that, but it's going to be a charge at the beginning and the end of the day is the plan. And so we're going much shorter routes and without carrying heavy cars and things like that, like the Washington State Ferry system, so it's much easier. But also, I just want to circle back, if I could, real quickly about Robert Liberty. You know, when we spoke to Robert after your show, I've known Robert a long time, and of course, he's very interested in facts and understanding, and he was just absolutely fabulous, asked great questions, came away with a lot better understanding of what we were doing, and as we expected, he just didn't have very much information at that time.
So let's talk a bit about what stage you're at now. Do you have any buy-in from any of the municipalities or other agencies that would be able to support you and give you the go-ahead more officially to run this ferry service?
That's such a great question. And I've learned the word support and buy-in. It's a broad continuum on that. But just going through those key agencies, ODOT has given us two grants. So grant one was for $200,000 that paid for the operational feasibility study and finance plan. I might add that just from a taxpayer perspective, that was valued at about $750,000. So it was a really great value of that grant program of what we delivered. And clearly all the agencies saw the results of that and they'd worked with us on the assumptions and said, this is a great use of money and this is feasible. And then for the city of Portland, because we're a nonprofit, we can't directly apply for a lot of grant programs. And so we have to go through one of these municipalities. And I say have to because it's really complex. It'd be far easier if we could just do it directly. But the city of Portland, all five city commissioners signed off, and actually all five of them testified and just glowing comments about watching the past 5 years of the work we've done and working with the bureaus. There are eight different city bureaus we work with. So that crosses over the jurisdictions of four of the different commissioners. And so they signed off on us applying for an FTA, that's the Federal Transportation Administration. It's an annual ferry grant program. It usually averages about $40 million a year. So for all the fiscal conservatives out there going, oh, should we be spending money on this? That federal money is going to a ferry service someplace in the United States. And I just think it's time for Portland to get its cut of it. So we have a request in for $2.7 million out of that fund. And then the next big piece of this is the big infrastructure bill. And of that $3+ trillion bill, $1.2 billion of it is coming to Oregon. A big chunk of it's already been designated for highway widening and Rose Quarter and the bridge project. But there's $400 million up for grabs. So we are asking for $6 million of that. If we had that in the FTA funding, that would fully fund us for 3 years, 2 years for a pilot project, the build out of the docks, a lease for the vessel, and get us underway. I mean, and that's some of it is, I think these agencies, it's almost hard to take us seriously because the amounts we're asking for are so little. And as a taxpayer, I look at $9.7 million for 3 years sounds like a lot. For transportation, it's tiny when most of these projects have a B behind them for billion and not millions of dollars. So really the city, and we are in conversations with the city to be our sponsor for that infrastructure bill dollars, which again is going through the state of Oregon. And then honestly, TriMet was our partner on our application into ODOT for the STIF grant. And Metro, they're our planning agency, and we're working with them to try to get into the regional transportation plan. It's frustrating, Barbara. I mean, when you look at 40% of greenhouse gas emissions are from transportation, and yet our regional transportation plan is only updated every 5 years. So in the midst of a climate crisis, come on, folks. You know, we got to change that process there. So you can tell I have a very strong point of view on this. You know, we've got to get ferries into that regional transportation plan. And then it's called also the TSP, Transportation Strategic Plan. So lots of plans out there that we actually have to be in order to take receipt of federal funding.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on Cable Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Frog Ferry founder and president Susan Bladholm and Captain Peter Wilcox about their vision to use the waterway Mother Nature gave us here in Portland as a natural highway to move about the region.
And I want to remind you that now is a good time to become a member of KBU during our spring membership drive. KBU has trained thousands of people how to make radio all for free thanks to the support we receive from our members. Please support this vital community institution and meet our $56,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KBU FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $12,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio.
I was just reading an article by Joe Courtwright, who's a local economist who actually is going to be on the show, talking about ODOT and I guess the other side of ODOT that isn't being really progressive in funding the Frog Ferry. And he's going to be on in a few weeks. But he was talking about how what Metro is doing is very much like what's shown in that movie Don't Look Up, which I actually watched the other night so I could be literate about it. And every environmentalist I talk to is using that as a metaphor. But I think you mentioned that, Susan, that there's some kind of just mismatch between the rhetoric of we are going to be sustainable, we're cutting our greenhouse gas emissions by, you know, 100% in 20 years, and meanwhile they're not looking at ferries as an alternative, a viable alternative to cars. I wonder, how do we get them to look up as opposed to don't look up?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the question, and it's part of my New Year's resolution to always be really professional, but also call these agencies out on it. And what Captain Wilcox and so many of our supporters and I have found is over 5 years, there's been this hot potato. Go talk to that agency. Go talk to that agency. Now you got to go do this. So we have jumped through all these hoops. And now, candidly, we're kind of cornering them in and saying, we've done all that. We've done all the feasibility studies. And now look at your goals. And when it comes to this region, when it comes to resilience, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, social equity, connecting people to good jobs, I'm sure I'm forgetting some, we are such a great match. We're not going to solve for houselessness. That's not where we are. But boy, even when it comes to the health perspective of reducing stress and anxiety and getting people out in the water systems, let alone in the age of a pandemic when you've got naturally great airflow on vessels, we just align in so many ways, but we have been so stuck in these patterns and the same pathways of these big chunks of money coming down, and they go to the same organizations and largely are invested into what we call the sunk costs of projects and infrastructure we already have. And that's what we're saying, enough. Just peel off a little bit for new innovations. Let's be strategic and let's look. We're not bleeding edge here even. We're just trying to catch up to other river cities around the world.
And on the West Coast.
And I'm curious about a little bit more detail about the response from City Council. I had a conversation with Joanne Hardesty a few weeks ago on the show, and I mentioned Frog Ferry, and she sounded supportive, but from a distance. She said, well, she wants to see the pilot project. She wants to see if you get the federal money. I'm wondering, is there more that you'd like to see from City Council than just kind of this wait and see?
Thank you for asking that question. I actually met with her chief policy officer last Friday. And so not just for her, but for four of the commissioners, because Dan Ryan has been supportive, but we just don't fit into the purview of one of his bureaus. But the other four, and we're saying, please call the FTA. We have a grant application in through the city. it's not enough as city council leadership just to say, oh, yeah, we went ahead and we forwarded that application. We need to advocate for it. We're the new kids on the block. We're competing against Seattle, San Francisco, D.C., New Orleans, you know, all of these other river systems. So if we're going to compete, let's be in it to win it. And then secondly is for the city's legislative agenda down in Salem. And especially with, this is one of the largest investments in American history, is this infrastructure bill. You know, when you think about the WAA projects, you know, under Roosevelt, what, 60 years ago? You know, this is a key opportunity for us. And I'm not just talking about Frog Ferry. I'm just talking about as Oregonians. Those tax dollars are going in to transportation projects. It's time for Portland and Oregon to get a piece of it, because I just honestly don't see us competing for it. So it's not just saying, oh, we supported it, and yeah, we helped you get that grant application in. It's we need our elected officials to make calls to some of those decision makers to say, hey, I want you to really hear us. That we support this. And I have to say, Congresswoman Bonamici, she's met with me directly. She's told me, who do you need me to call? That's the sort of leadership we need more of.
Now, you said you met with Joanne Hardesty's office. What was the response? I mean, is she coming on any more strongly now than she was when she talked to me last month?
Well, this was last Friday for the conversation. So he was going to go back and talk with her and check on a couple different things. There is a conversation about a resolution within City Hall to say we want to be more actively engaged. And there are several points to that that we've asked for the city to back. So that is, please support us in an application for the infrastructure bill. Please help us get into the regional transportation plan with Metro. And gosh, am I going to remember the other ones? But there are like four different bulleted items that we've asked for. And we'll see if they step up and are willing to do that. We're not asking for money. I mean, that's the thing. It's not even money. We're just asking for leaders to say, yes, I'll be a champion.
Well, and I think that there's a model for in organizing that we saw in the state with the organizing to stop the Jordan Cove LNG export terminal. And 5 years ago, elected leaders across the state, with about three or four exceptions, were just either mum on it or supportive of Jordan Cove. And it made this big turnaround in the last 3 years. And we saw 2 years ago where the state, the agency started denying the permits. We saw Kate Brown taking a stand. We saw the congressional delegations led by Peter DeFazio, but later on, Merkley and Wyden getting on as well, opposing it. And I keep having this image of this photograph that I saw of big signs that say, climate leaders do not build pipelines. And I wonder if you can think of a similar phrase, that climate leaders do not expand freeways or whatever. Because when you're talking about all the climate issues that are being raised by thinking about ferries as opposed to freeways, that could start to put more pressure on elected officials to start to actually act out the rhetoric they've been spouting for the last 5 or 10 years.
I love that. We'll be following up with that. That's a great idea.
And I can put you in touch with some Jordan Cove leadership, you know, in terms of like what they did on the statewide and the federal level to really stop it. Well, I got a call from a question from a caller, and I think this should be for Peter. He wanted to know, or she wanted to know, if frequent river debris would be a concern for the ferry. And I know that Susan mentioned that in the beginning about other places that have river debris. So, Peter, what is that a concern, and how would you address this? Particularly, like, I know in the last few weeks there's been a lot of log debris in the Willamette River from all the high water. So how do you deal with that?
Well, that's a great question. And so the first thing, of course, we've spent a lot of time studying this issue. It's a key issue and one of the key points of how you design for a river because it's common. And you look at how we've looked at whether we wanted to use jets or props. And different technologies that allow protection for the props. We're definitely focusing on protecting the prop from the debris. And part of the pilot study is going to help us really test and figure out what's exactly the best way to deal with that. But it's something that is managed by ferry systems around the world, and we'll certainly be able to manage it here in Portland as well. So we're not concerned about it. We're just going to do best practices and test before we build a bigger fleet.
And as we're talking, I'm remembering the flood of 96 and the amount of debris that piled up against the Selwood Bridge might have been part of its undermining why they had to rebuild a new bridge. Not really, but it really, there was a massive amount of logs and people's decks, hibachis on them, just all piled up against the river, against the bridge. And I think that it was the case with all the bridges throughout this, down the Willamette River that had all that debris. So in a critical, like a 100-year water event, like we had in 96, and then we had again in 97, and we've had it probably a couple more times since then, how would you manage the ferries when you have the river, is the current is so fast, and there's so much else floating in it besides your boats?
Well, really, the challenge on the Willamette, and why probably it's one of the greatest reasons why we don't have ferries today, is you have the low bridge clearance, you have low, ultra low, and no wake zones, and then river debris. But really, the engineering has come a long way, just looking at the navigation systems for what are called deadheads. I mean, if you're out there and it's just a tinker town where you just have logs everywhere, you're not going to cut through it. I have been out on the water with Captain Brett Bybee with Columbia Launch Service. He's been great to us, and we've done a number of river runs with him. And we've been out there in April and high water when it just looks like chocolate milk out there and a ton of river debris. I've had a couple offices where my offices and former jobs have looked out over the river. So I'm very, very aware of it. I walk the waterfront once, if not twice a week, and I'm just constantly monitoring the amount of debris out there. So I think to Captain Wilcox's point, we have done some analysis of it, and even early on looking at jets versus props. And you'll probably have callers call in to say, oh yeah, you should definitely go with jets. But jets, if you lose a jet, the amount of time on the maintenance and the repair and that, and you're out kind of dead in the water, if you will, versus props. Props are less expensive. They're much more easily turned out. And so that's why, as part of our vessel RFP, we'll be going with props and then also reinforced bows for that. But, you look at the working river out there now with, barges and a number of our vessels. And we've evolved enough that there are ways to mitigate that problem.
Well, actually, I mean, I walk along the river a lot since I live right near it. And you see there's all the sternwheelers that go by. I mean, there's usually, like on the weekends, there's probably, I'm going to see a boat once an hour at least. So I think hopefully the ferry service might be a little faster than that. But it seems like, as you're saying, boats do seem to manage to use the river. Of course, the sternwheelers are usually out in the spring and summer. They're not there in the winter.
And you're probably referring to the Portland Spirit.
Right, yeah.
It's out there, right. And, I think they're at about 8 knots. I mean, don't hold me to that, but I we'll be at 22 knots. So we'll be considerably faster, and we're lower. So you feel like you're in kind of a race car down on the river. And when we've taken some of our stakeholders out just on pilot boats and we're running the route at speed at 22 knots, and they're like, we had no idea. They're like little kids out there. It feels like we're moving so fast. But a lot of that, Barbara, is the ambiance that you mentioned. When you've got falcons, flying overhead and you're watching the fish jump and just the beauty and all that fresh air and just seeing our city from a different perspective. And I think that's a key point, is the perception of time. So there are studies that have been done, and the perception of time on a boat, it passes by far more quickly than if you're stuck in traffic in your own car or in a bus, which, we want to promote bus transit, and we want people to be taking buses down to the ferry stops. But in terms of that time and the highest and best use of the time, so for that 25-minute ride, did I finish it feeling depleted or did I feel energized? And I think some people kind of roll their eyeballs and go, really? But you know what? It's actually a fact for ferries. It's just such an enjoyable, invigorating experience.
Are you listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland? Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, and KODX, LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Frog Ferry founder and president Susan Bladholm and Captain Peter Wilcox about their vision to use the waterway Mother Nature gave us here in Portland as a natural highway to move about the region.
And I want to remind you that now is a good time to support KBOO during our spring membership drive. KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio all for free, thanks to the support we receive from our members. Please support this vital community institution and help us meet our $56,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KBOO FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $12,000, thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio.
Well, Susan, in the last few minutes that we have, I wanted to talk a little more about this experience of being on the ferry. And you mentioned it's a 25-minute ride. Would that be from Vancouver to downtown Portland?
No, that's from Cathedral Park then to River Place.
So that's rather a long time. I mean, because you can drive that in probably 15 minutes, maybe.
Well, on transit now for OHSU commuters coming out of St. John's and Cathedral Park, it's actually over an hour. And for those commuters coming out of those neighborhoods to go to Portland State, and these are stats coming from OHSU and PSU and the transportation leaders there, that's over an hour. So, you know, when you think through that total throughput, both from a time and a cost perspective, so if you're driving yourself and the cost of the car and the cost of parking and the cost of commuting and not necessarily knowing your on-time arrival, right? Okay, you've got variability there. Whereas ferries typically have a very high percentage of on-time reliability. For King County, which is the larger ferry operation up in Seattle, they're at 98 to 99% on-time reliability over the course of the year. And that's over the course of the past 4 years. So yeah, you know, from a time perspective, coming out of Vancouver to downtown Portland, that's about 45 minutes. So looking at that commute, yeah, you're often over an hour for that, especially pre-COVID. I have not gone back and looked at the timeframes now, but what we're hearing from OHSU and PSU is today it's over an hour to make that commute, and we'd be 25 minutes. Now you got to get to and from the ferry stops, right? So you still have to factor that in. But we still think it's compelling. You have to get to and from the bus as well.
I was just going to say the time on the ferry can be productive time, too. You can be working on your computer, doing emails, reading, relaxing, whatever is appropriate. So you arrive at work much more ready to go, and not all worn out from a commute. And so it's not equivalent in all ways. It's got a lot going for it.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about what it feels to be on the river. I have this thought about there's this little train that goes from Selwood up to OMSI, and it's an amazing train trip because you go through Oak's Bottom, and it's like being in this wilderness area for at least 10 minutes of the train trip. And even when you take the MAX line from Selwood or from Westmoreland downtown, there's a little stretch where you're going through woods. And it's so different than being on any highway. So I wanted sort of to talk about what it would be like. And let's start up in Vancouver and describe what you'd feel and see and experience on that trip until you get to downtown Portland.
Well, Captain, how about if I start, and then Captain Wilcox spends a lot of time on the water, a lot of his life on the water. But I think what's unusual coming out of Vancouver is you're heading west for a while. You know, you're really getting around the peninsula there and Kelly Park. So that's why it's not just a straight shot. You know, we all think about I-5, but actually you're heading west. And so very quickly you're going under the rail bridge. It's very green and very treed on both sides of the river. And then you head south into the Willamette River. You've got Savis Island off to your right. And so that's all green. And that's a berm. So it's definitely green space. You do have the Port of Portland. You've got Terminal 5 up there, and you've got some grain companies there, and there's some industrial there. And it gets very quiet, actually. It's just so green. And for a number of Portlanders that we took out on the tour about a year ago, lifelong Portlanders, and they said, I had no idea. I've never seen this. This is so stunningly beautiful. You know, you think about going out and getting pumpkins or picking peaches on Savis Island, but I never really thought about it from the river perspective here. And you pass by then the Terminal 4, where the auto terminal is for the Port of Portland, and right there's Cathedral Park and that magnificent cathedral, you know, park, and the St. John's Bridge, which is so stunningly beautiful. And there's the wind. I mean, there's all the romance to it, but I do think there is this sense of connection in your place in our community. And it is, I think that a leader from Audubon said there are 7 peregrine falcon nests between Cathedral Park to River Place. And so when you start thinking about how we can provide interpretive tours talking about the river system there, and for field trips for kids or for families being out there, and then we intend to have narrated tours talking about our indigenous past that the leaders of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde would actually create and narrate as well. So you have that experience, but also, Barbara, I mean, I have a yoga practice, and so I'm thinking about, you know, we can have like poets on a day for one part of the vessel. You know, if it's a rainy day and you're inside and you just want something different on a January day, or chair yoga, for instance. So, you know, because this is such a grassroots effort and it's so community-based, we can make it what it is. Now, I will tell you, I've heard from cyclists and cycling friends, go ahead and put basically an exercise bike there so the power can go back into the vessel. And I was a co-founder of Cycle Oregon, and I was the first executive ride director. So that is something I took out to a number of ferry consultants and boat builders, and they were like, that's going to cost you about $1 million more and cause a lot of drag. So we're not going to have that, but we'll have space for cyclists to have their bikes on board as well. And then a small concession area. So big screen there where we can do our interpretive, tours, and obviously our safety briefing. But there's a bow as well. So during nice weather, people can go out there and they can take their selfies and hopefully just be present and to take in the beauty of the experience.
Well, I was thinking, if the bicyclists want to add to the power generation, you could use them to power your PA system. I've seen them do that at several farmers markets. Well, beside what's going on inside the ferry, let's go back out in the bow, and besides the peregrine falcons, there's a lot of other wildlife that people are going to be seeing. When I've taken the ferry between Port Angeles and Victoria, you always see orcas and dolphins and stuff. So we don't have orcas and dolphins, but there's a lot of other wildlife we could see. So what would some of that be?
Well, that's one of the really great things. There's so many, and it changes with the season. So you see the eagles that we have around here, so many eagles around here, and all the blue heron, so many seabirds that change with the seasons. There's also some non-wildlife features that Susan didn't mention that are, I think, really quite cool. And, you really never understand a river city until you've seen it from the water. And so starting back at the beginning in Vancouver in this imaginary trip, you're going to see all these giant cargo ships tied up at anchorages there, tied up at buoys out in the middle of the river, Columbia River. You see the big ferry, the big tug fleets that are pushing the barges up and down the river, tied up at their docks. You see boat building going on, tugs being built. You see big ships and Navy ships and cruise ships and all kinds of ships being refurbished Swan Island. Then you begin to see the way that the architecture of the city, a lot of great architecture of the city faces the river. The Portland Water Company's Bureau's research lab is beautiful that you see along the way, and some of the really nice dense housing along the river. So, and then of course the whole the whole series of great bridges, and you see them really close. When you pass under the steel bridge, it's a great experience to go and almost feel you could reach up and touch it, but it's always a lot further away than you think as you go under that one. So you get that whole experience too, and some of the travel, of course, will be at night where you get great views of the lit-up bridges that the Portland Light Brigade has done. And during times of year like this, when you go through, you'll see the Portland Winter Light Festival on display as you go back home from work or come to work potentially. So, I mean, there's all that. It's a really great experience. You never can tire of what you can see from the water and on the water. And the water itself, of course, is a whole artistic canvas as well.
So is the pilot project going to happen with or without funding, or does that have to get funded first?
We're going to have to get funding some way.
So do you now have any idea when what's your projection of when you could see this ferry system running?
So we are looking at spring, summer of 2023. So we're waiting on the FTA funding. That's supposed to be announced by March 1. And then for this infrastructure funding, that will be over the course of the next 6 months. And then we've got a number of corporate requests out.
I am looking forward to it personally. I'm sure a lot of listeners are too. I want to really thank you both for telling us about the possibility of Portland having a frog ferry system. So I want to thank Susan and Captain Peter Wilcox. Thanks so much for being on Locus Focus.
We've been talking with frog ferry proponents Susan Blanholm and Captain Peter Wilcox, and you've been listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of the show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KBOO in the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible from home during this pandemic. And you can help us reach our $56,000 goal during our spring membership drive by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk more about what's going on at Port Westward in Columbia County with Columbia Riverkeeper staff attorney Aaron Saylor. We'll go out with music by Wendy Wallman. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, wash your hands, get your COVID shots, and remember to socially distance when necessary and wear a mask.
Sunshine in the morning. Why should I feel cold? Feel like I'm standing still, but I'm growing so old. My baby's gonna leave me now. That's how it seems. Hard times make life. So much for the dreams. Well, but the river runs wide and the river runs deep. Whoa, take my baby's heart and rock him down to sleep. Well, Mr. Boatman, can you take my troubled dreams to the island?